If you're enjoying this podcast, please leave us a review and tap the follow button so that you never miss an episode.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another Monday. You know what that means? It's time for this week's episode of RFRX, your prescription for coping. I'm Kara. I'll be your host. And I have with me lovely and much, much cooler returning co-host Helen. Helen, how are you doing?
I am doing awesome. I am very cool. And I'm so excited for this weekend. I'm so excited. Like, I just can't.
Helen, what's happening this weekend?
So for those of you who have been living under a proverbial rock, this weekend is the RFR excursion in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. So a lot of these wonderful people that you see their faces will be at the excursion. And you can, like, if you live in Tennessee, you got some time, you can come up for the weekend, or you'll just have to plan for next year. But it's going to be amazing. There'll be lectures and food and hugs and good conversation. It's going to be wonderful. So I'm so freaking excited. Like,
yes, I'm so excited. I am too. I cannot wait. I am super pumped. I've been looking forward to this literally since last year when we met.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. We'll actually be able to hang out in person, like real friends.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. This will be the first time that you and I have been in the same physical space at the same time. I am so pumped. Gail, so, yeah. Yes. You may notice on your screen, Sherry and Gail waving at you and Glenda.
Is Sherry doing a talk?
Sherry is our MC, right?
Yes, Sherry is our MC.
Okay, great. Hey. All right, cool.
And I'm MC just so you can, pay attention because it's a different weird accent talking at you. But I just am like, Pat!
We'll have interpreters, you know, for those of you that only understand American English. Just kidding. We won't. You're on your own. But we cannot wait. It's going to be so fun. I can't wait to hang out with y'all again. We had the best time last year, and I'm pretty sure this year is shaping up to be the same way. So
I'm going to be there. You're all going to be 20% cooler. So
yes. So hopefully some of y'all are going to be able to join us, and we'll report back next week on how it went. Yeah. So look forward to that. Maybe we'll have some highlights to share with y'all. So definitely catch us next week.
Gala's engineer is an ex-Christian who has worked to build an online community of secular skeptics that analyze apologist claims to give people the best info so they can stand up and use their voices. He focuses on the intersection of atheism, secularism, religion, politics, history, and science. Currently creating videos and social media content to educate his audience on these topics. So welcome, John. Welcome to RFR. I'm so glad I pulled your arm into doing a talk.
I mean, you didn't really have to pull it all that much. I think I was like, yes, definitely. I'd love to be on.
I was like, come on, John, do a talk. Yes.
And we are so excited to have you. I cannot wait. I always like to, if we have a guest on who has a lot of online content or maybe they've written a book or something like that, I always like to catch up beforehand. And I have had a great time watching a lot of your content online on your YouTube channel. So we'll talk about that later. But thank you for doing that and agreeing to be here. And I am super excited to have this conversation with you. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm super excited to be here and to, you know, be questioned by whoever and answer whatever questions I can.
Yeah, we've got a lot of tough questions for you. A lot of gotcha questions. I'm just kidding. It's not that way.
But very deep questions.
Yes. We had a whole episode one time about deepities, but check that one out on YouTube. No deepities tonight. But maybe to start out with, tell us a little bit about yourself. What have you been up to lately? And then we want to also get into kind of your background. You were religious before this, but get us started. Tell us about you.
Well, you know, here lately, just been pretty much grinding it out on YouTube, making content, trying to figure out the best ways to get content to people and everything. I've been kind of preparing for a vacation that we're just about to take. We're leaving on Wednesday to go to Rome, and we're going to be on a cruise. And, you know, so I remember hearing about like the retreat that, or the thing that y'all got going on this weekend. And I was, when I figured out what day it was on, I was like, ah, crap, that's when we're going to Rome. And so I really wish that we could have, been there for that this weekend, but we're going to be out of the country. As far as like what I've got going on, I mean, I've got social media stuff going on like Facebook and TikTok, and well, at least while TikTok's legal in the United States for whatever reason. And then, of course, YouTube. And I've been doing a lot of content kind of surrounding mainly atheism, just about like either, people that are trying to disprove atheism or people trying to convince other people that they should be this particular religion. And so I look for content that I can sort of add a different perspective to. And it's not necessarily always unique. Sometimes it feels like beating a dead horse, but you never know which piece of content somebody will watch first. And so like, just because I've covered it before, doesn't mean necessarily that the same people are going to be watching, the content. So I try to keep that kind of focus in mind. And, this year I've really kind of focused on working in not only like atheist centered content, or, just content centered around the question of whether or not God exists, but also like touching on evolution, maybe some other philosophical topics that we can discuss. And then also like I've been working in a lot more mythicist oriented content this year. I've had primarily Richard Carrier on my channel to respond to certain critics and certain claims, just to better educate people about at least a decently academic, mythicist position. It's the only position that's actually been academically reviewed and passed peer review. So that's the position that I hold to on that particular topic. And that's generally how I run my channel, is that I try to base it all on like scholarship or scientific studies or anything like that. Typically when I do a response video, I'll go out and I'll search for information to support the points that I want to make, or support better points. Like if there's a better point to be made, I try to search like, good information to bring that up in the video. So, I mean, that's pretty much what I generally do on my channel and what I've been doing recently.
Awesome. Well, thanks for sharing that with us. And, I think now, given that you mentioned that you work a lot online and that you're going to Rome soon, I think that I now am required, given that we also are online, to ask you, how often do you think about the Roman Empire?
Well, I got to tell you, ever since we started planning this trip, it's been a whole lot more than normal. And I think it really depends on what you mean by thinking about the Roman Empire, because I do a lot of reading, like scholarly reading on, first century Judea, Christianity, and that has a lot to do with the Roman Empire, just because of its interaction there. But as far as like just purely the Roman Empire, I would say prior to planning this trip, I'd rarely ever thought about it. But my lovely wife, Casey, she has taken it upon herself to be a personal tour guide in Rome for all of us, and she has done a lot of research on it. So we've been just consuming so much content about the Roman Empire and Rome and all that. Like we're just going to be so edified by this trip. At least the first couple days of it.
I hope all the churches you visit in Rome will not smite you.
Yeah. So I'm really hope we're actually going to visit the Vatican, and I'm hoping I don't burst into flames.
Yeah. Don't. That's yeah. That, yeah.
You know, I've been there and I did not burst into flames, so I think you're probably safe. I don't know. Can't make any guarantees, but they didn't smite me, so you might be all right.
But both of my bosses just came back from the Rome, and they're Jewish, so they didn't burst into flames either. So I think everybody's okay.
Well, and I feel like, you know, since we're doing segues this evening, I feel like all this talk of the Roman Empire and the Vatican may be a good segue into talking about some of your former beliefs. John, do you want to tell us a little bit about your religious background?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, ironically enough, considering I just mentioned the Vatican, I grew up Catholic. But you know, I'm from North Alabama, and I pretty much lived in North Alabama most of my life. I spent a few months in South Alabama when I was younger, but you know, I've been in Alabama my entire life. So like this whole idea of God existing and what religion I was just kind of foisted upon myself. So I say I grew up Catholic, but I was pretty much just told you're Catholic. And then after that, like, I didn't really pay too much attention to it because, you know, I was a young kid. I didn't really care. I accepted that God existed and all this other stuff. And like, I did all the general like Christian and Catholic things, but it really wasn't all that important in my life. After my parents divorced, though, we were only Catholic for a little bit longer, and then we left the Catholic Church, and then I kind of bounced around Southern Baptist churches and non-denominational churches. There was never really one central church. Like, there was never a doctrine or anything like that that really appealed to me. And I mostly, you know, was religious at this time because my friends were. If you wanted to have a friend group, like, you were gonna have to be religious in some kind of respect. So like, I had this one group of friends where, you know, they had a Bible study, you know, every Wednesday, and I cannot remember a single thing that was taught at any of those Bible studies because I was not there for a Bible study. I was there for the food and to play basketball with friends. And those are the things that I remember from like Bible study. And then there's, you know, the youth church. I never went to like Sunday church or Sunday mass like after leaving the Catholic Church, because I wasn't forced to, you know. There were times where I was forced to as a kid. That was mainly when I was with my dad, who was still Catholic, is still Catholic. And, you know, he would have me go to church, but, you know, that stopped after this one time when, like, he caught me falling asleep in church, because I don't know who here has been to a Catholic mass. It is so mechanical and boring that, I mean, I even as a kid, I was bored to out of my mind, you know, in mass. But so I would go to like Wednesday night youth church, like a youth service kind of thing. And that, again, that was mainly for, you know, friendship and having friends and all this other stuff. And so that's pretty much how I progressed. I kind of went back and forth between being deeply religious, because I felt like that's what I needed to be, and not really caring all that much. Like, it didn't really enter my mind. So I kind of wavered between those two extremes, I guess, when I was growing up. And, you know, there was a lot of times where I definitely felt like how the religion was affecting like my mental health and all that kind of stuff. Maybe we can get into that a little bit later, but there were definitely times where, you know, me looking back now with, you know, a more secular worldview, I recognize like how messed up like that was, that the effects that religion had on me. And, you know, I eventually left the faith after a long time of considering like what I believed and why I believed it. And during that time, there was a lot of instances where I would be like, oh yeah, definitely believe in God. I, you know, I feel God's presence and all this other stuff. Like, I felt all of that. And then there were other times like I was like, well, I don't really know. Like, like, all of this is explained better by, like, you know, analytically by like science and all this other stuff. So I went back and forth between those, but I what I did was I just really honed in on listening to both sides of the topic. And listening to debates really kind of helped me out, because it's supposed to present both sides of the topic. I know not a lot of people like to hear debates, but I, when I was trying to figure out like what I believed and why I believed it, it really helped me like see the two sides. And I guess maybe because when I was a kid and growing up, I was always very analytically and scientifically minded. Like I excelled in math and science, and I sucked in language like English and literature and all this other stuff. And so, you know, being more scientifically minded and everything like that, like I compartmentalized pretty hard, like believing in God and then also being the scientifically minded individual. And so when I started listening to the both sides of the debate, that was the stark difference that I noticed, was that, you know, the religious side had a lot of ad hoc statements that were not supported by evidence. And it was just like, oh, well, you know, it ultimately relied on this unsupported faith that a lot of people had. Whereas the atheist side was more analytical, more based on evidence and more logical. And I think that that part, the logical part right there, was kind of what really made the difference for me, because like I can like going through engineering school and not really thinking about logic prior to that, but you know, coming through, which logic in engineering school is a lot different than like philosophical kinds of logic, but you like I could still like know, I can notice when one thing did not connect to the other, like this thing doesn't make sense, you know, getting to this conclusion and everything like that. And so I think that it just made me think deeper about like these things. And so it ended up like I graduated with my bachelor's degree, but by the time I got my bachelor's degree in 2009, I had already decided that I was not an atheist anymore, not a theist. I was not a Christian. And then it wasn't until like I left I left school in general with my master's degree in software engineering that, you know, I found myself with a lot of time on my hands. And so that's how I created the Godless Engineer like page on Facebook. And then it just kind of went off from there. That's when I kind of got started into like atheist activism. But there was a long time there where I was just, you know, trying to figure out what I actually believed in. I was really struggling with it. And the one pivot point that I can point to is I was playing in this church league, right? This church softball league. And one night after one of the games, one of my friends said, well, if you don't believe in the Bible cover to cover as literal history and truth, then you're not really a Christian. And so like I really took that to heart, because I mean he was one of my best friends at the time. And I eventually you know, came to the conclusion of like, well, I'm not a Christian, so I got to figure out what I am. And you know, after struggling, like I said, listening to debates and reading a whole bunch of literature on the topic, I finally, you know, left religion altogether. But it was that point right there, that straw man no true Scotsman fallacy, that really kind of got me thinking like, well, maybe I'm not so much a Christian. And you know, I know that my friend probably hates to know that, which I don't know if he does or not, but because after I left religion, I was an atheist. Like I don't know what it is, and I don't know if anybody else has this experience, but once you mention that you don't believe in God anymore, people that were just never devoutly religious like immediately become severely religious, to the point where you just can't interact with them anymore. And that's what happened with my friend. But, you know, most of my friends, they were deeply religious. So I ended up having to figure something else out. That's where the online community came into play there. So, I mean, typically, I generally say that it wasn't one thing that convinced me to not believe in God. But I do think that there's one pivotal point that really kind of started my journey to losing my faith, and it would definitely have to be that. So I hope that thoroughly answered the question.
Yes, that was awesome. I love it. Thank you for not giving me a one-word answer to my question. This is a conversation and discussion program. So yes, that was great. And I absolutely do get where you're coming from with that. I feel like a lot of times we have many people on the show whose story is, you know, something like, well, there was this event that happened or some, you know, earth-shattering, life-altering moment that happened. And then after that, you know, I questioned everything. But I very much can identify with what you're describing, where it was kind of similar for me. I was in college and started learning a lot of things that didn't fit with the very literal interpretation of the Bible that we had been taught. And that does start to unravel it. If everything hinges on you have to believe every single claim in this book in order for you to be a member of this religion, and then you realize, wow, there are a lot of claims being made in this book that I cannot agree with. It's kind of downhill from there. So yeah, I get where you're coming from with that for sure. And you know, I'm interested, something we often hear from our clients and people who call into the helpline or come to our support groups or hangouts here at RFR is that once they do start questioning their faith, they may end up feeling actually embarrassed or ashamed about having believed it so long, especially if they do come from a tradition where they're believing everything very literally, like about talking animals and people flying or being resurrected or whatever the claims are in their faith or their version of it. And I'm wondering if you experienced that and if you can talk a little bit about dealing with those kind of feelings of, wow, how did I go on so long thinking some of these things?
Yeah. I mean, I have a very, I guess, I don't know how to explain it, but like, I like to laugh things off. And so, like I remember as a kid when I was visiting my dad one time, you know, my dad was religious. Although, I mean, he's kind of one of those Catholics that goes sometimes, and even today, like he goes sometimes to church and to mass and everything. And I remember being a kid and I was with my dad one weekend, and I remember specifically writing in this journal that I was trying to, I don't know why I tried to keep journals when I was a kid, but I did. And I remember writing, and I was logically thinking out the implications of like the Christian text. And in this particular situation, I was like contemplating what it means for us to all descend from Adam and Eve. And like, I was like, well, does that mean that we're just all related to each other? And like, as a kid, I wasn't thinking, oh, that's a lot of brother, sister, cousin fucking going on there. And, you know, this doesn't mesh well with genetics, because I didn't know anything about the genetics at the time. I didn't really care. I was just thinking like more, I guess, conceptually about it, like, oh, Adam and Eve, and then everybody exploded from them. And that was easy for my brain to understand at that point. And I didn't think about the larger ramifications of it. I'm just like, man, I am like related to everybody. And that doesn't sound good coming from a person from Alabama, but you know, it just goes to show that like later on, when I left religion and I started thinking about these things again, and this popped up in my mind, like, I really thought that as a kid. Like, I just sort of laugh at myself because, you know, I was a kid, and I feel like, you know, a lot of people may be in similar situations where it's like, well, you know, I grew up thinking that these things were true. Like, I grew up thinking that if you hit a donkey enough, they're going to start talking shit to you. You know, that kind of thing. Like, I feel like a lot of people grew up with things that are just foisted upon them as objective truth. Like, this is just the truth of reality. Okay. And there are a lot of things that people are not taught that's from the Bible. Like, if you were to tell me, oh yeah, one time God, he sewed up every single vagina in this one guy's house because one dude lied to him about who his wife was. And it's like, I would not have known that as a kid. But now looking back, I'm like, how did I ever believe anything in this book? And, you know, that's one example. And like the whole Moses crossing the Red Sea. Like, I mean, as a kid, I was like, oh yeah, that definitely happened. But now I'm like, do you understand the physics required to create a wind tunnel large enough to blow like water, to separate water and everything like that? Like, that would be a wind tunnel and people would just be like mountains of goo on the other side, because that's what Moses did. If you read the Bible, Moses lifted up his staff and God's breath blew, or some kind of wind, God made some kind of wind blow to separate the seas. And it's like, this is a wind tunnel of epic proportions that would have just killed anybody trying to cross this. And so I come at it with a very, I guess, maybe jovial sort of look. Like, I look at my past self and think, wow, I really believe that, but I can laugh at myself because of, and because I now I know better. Like, oh yeah, I did believe that, ha ha, but now I understand like why that's ridiculous. And I think that that's what really kind of, I guess, helps me is like understanding why something is ridiculous, not just that something is ridiculous, but like the why of it. And maybe that's just part of like my more engineering analytical kind of side of me, to understand the why of something. Like, why is this ridiculous? Because otherwise, like, it, what, you know, if you don't have the why of why it's ridiculous, then there's no explanation. And it's just somebody's opinion as to it being ridiculous. And so that's never been convincing to me. I always like to know like the reasons why this is particularly weird. And I mean, I do that with several other things. Like, I remember watching Escape from Alcatraz with my stepfather. And, you know, in there's this one scene I remember specifically of them being in this the warden's like office. And like the warden has this dude's like, I want to say transcript, his record, you know, out there. And it's like above normal IQ and all this other stuff. And it like, this guy's like really smart. And I'm just sitting there like, why doesn't this concern him? And so like my stepfather's like, well, he was stupid enough to get caught. And I'm like, I mean, yeah, I guess so. I mean, he did get caught. But you know, if anybody's seen that movie, they do like escape. So I mean, I guess the joke's on them. But
I have seen that movie. That's a solid movie. It's second yeah. only to The Rock in, you know, Alcatraz movies, in my opinion.
I wholeheartedly agree. But you know, I guess all that's just to say that I've always kind of been that way, wanting to know the whys of something. And so it just took a correct application of why. You know, in order for me to sort of shuck off like that feeling of embarrassment or anything like that. And even now that extends to now, like current things now, because like, you know, I will admit that being from North Alabama, growing up with extremely Southern relatives, I have heard a plethora of problematic things, and there have been a plethora of problematic things that I didn't know were problematic. And so, you know, there would be times when I would say something that I didn't know was problematic, but ended up, you know, I learned from it. And so now I can look back and I can see how far I've grown, and I can not necessarily laugh off me being problematic or anything like that, but just laugh off, you know, my former ideas, because, you know, these things are problematic or these things are ridiculous. And now I know better. Like, I feel better that I've been able to figure this out for myself. And so I feel, I guess, maybe a little emboldened, you know, maybe a little too sure of myself sometimes about my growth. And so I think that's what's really helped me, is just being able to laugh off past ridiculous notions and ideas.
Yeah, so it would help if I turn my microphone on. Anyway, I completely related to what you were saying, because like I grew up Catholic, but I also got involved in these like non-denominational sects because I needed to make friends. Like, there's not a lot of young Catholic people, y'all. Like, in the congregation I grew up in, everybody was like old. And they were not going to hang around with like a 9-year-old. So my mom thought that it'd be good for me to go like youth groups and stuff like that and to form relationships. So I definitely felt you there, because you and I have a similar relationship when it comes to the Catholic Church and how we were raised in it. So, you know, but we can talk about that later. Anyway, so this kind of transmissions into me into this other question where you mentioned your mental health and earlier, you know, on your videos and things and other things that you've brought up. And when you've done those interviews and things like that, how did you understand those feelings about religion? And what was the process for you when you started to deconstruct and look at it for what it is? Because like, I didn't think I had some trauma from religion, but I'm starting to realize that I'm like, there's some shit that I got to deal with. So, you know, I'm curious, you know, where you were once you, the analytical side was, you know, you got that, but the emotional stuff started coming up.
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question because, you know, going back to, you know, when I was a teenager going through high school and everything like that, like I had a very, I guess, a little bit of a contentious like home situation. Both of my parents, you know, they were divorced and they were kind of at odds with each other while I was growing up. So there was a lot of unhealthy things, you know, going on there. But I just, the one thing that, I recognize now is, you know, when I was a teenager, I found myself, on my bed curled up in a fetal position and I was begging God to just let me die. And because, growing up Catholic, you know, it was always told to me like, well, if you commit suicide, you go to hell. Like that's how it was presented. I went to a Catholic private school when I was young. And so like that whole idea was already baked into, you know, what I thought about God and the afterlife and everything like that. So like, I felt like there was nothing I could do about it, but at the same time, like I was definitely feeling, you know, all the issues that go along with that type of clinical depression, which is what I was eventually diagnosed with later on in life. And, you know, after leaving religion, I think that it just really helped me directly deal with the issues that I had. And I've used this analogy before, and I feel like it's a really good analogy for this particular situation. Because I don't know if anybody here has watched the movie Big Daddy, which I know is a really popular movie. Probably everybody's seen it. But in Big Daddy, there's this one part where the kid is jumping around after he's eaten all of this sugar and everything like that. And then he just looks Adam Sandler in the face and then he throws up on the floor. And in this situation, the vomit is, you know, poor mental health. It's clinical depression or whatever you might have. And Adam Sandler is religion, and the newspaper is God. And basically Adam Sandler goes and he just covers the vomit with the newspaper. And I feel like that's what religion does a lot of times is it covers for the mental health issues that you have. And it fools you into thinking, there's nothing there. There's nothing under that newspaper. Just forget about it. But you know, once you remove the newspaper, like you know, leave religion or you don't even have to leave religion in order to acknowledge these things going on. But once you remove God from the situation, then you can directly deal with the issue. And I feel like that's what kind of happened for me because, you know, it didn't happen immediately. Like I left religion, but I still had like these mental health issues and they were progressively getting worse. It's just that, you know, now I didn't have, you know, God or any kind of idea of God or anything like that to mask it for me. And so what ended up happening was I had to get help. Like I went to, I got a therapist. I went and talked to a therapist who also was working with a psychiatrist. And so they, you know, psychiatrist prescribed me stuff to help me. And then, you know, eventually it got to the point where I didn't need the prescriptions anymore. And the therapist helped me develop tools and certain mindsets that would help me not have as severe bouts of depression as I did have. And that's an invaluable thing. And like I said before, you don't have to leave religion in order to, you know, get this kind of help. But I do feel like religion is a hindrance to really dealing with the mental health issues that you may be suffering from. And I think that if I hadn't have left religion, then, you know, that vomit would have festered, you know, on my brain. And I don't know what could have ended up happening, but I am definitely glad that, you know, I recognized that I needed help and I got it. And of course, this was, I'm not sure when RFR actually formed, but I know that I didn't know about RFR at the time. But if I had, I definitely would have used RFR to find a good therapist and psychiatrist, because the psychiatrist that I went to, very religious, he asked me, well, there was this one weekend where I was going to an atheist conference, and you know, my psychiatrist asked me, well, what are you doing this weekend? And I'm like, oh, I'm going to this atheist conference, you know, I kind of do atheist activism and everything like that. And he's like, well, what do y'all do, sit around talk about how there's no God? And then he wrote me the prescription and I left. And so that's, I really kind of wish that I had a resource to get me somebody that wouldn't do that. But it's kind of one of those things where I live in North Alabama, everybody's religious in one fashion or another. So it's kind of like, I just, you know, it's either I cause a lot of problems with everybody, or I try to just, you know, get through my day around here. And so I have to pick and choose which battles I do, because it's not like I do that with everything. Like with a psychiatrist, you know, I kind of felt like there was a bit of an imbalance there and I couldn't really, you know, say anything at that point. But like, for instance, at work, I didn't really have a problem voicing my opinion, although the last time that I did, it ended up with a dude screaming at me, and then another guy apologized to me for their outburst and reaction and everything. So I was just like, maybe I'll just keep work to work related shit from now on. Like, I don't hold back if anybody asks me about it, but it's kind of like, I don't push the situation to where it's in that kind of situation anymore. So yeah, I hope that answered the question. I'm very wordy, so if you don't stop me, then I'll just keep going.
John, you and I, you know, this is the brains we have. Like, we love listening to ourselves talk. That's the way it is. But I do want to point out.
Yeah.
But no. Since you mentioned, like, you know, being concerned of what kind of therapy you're going to get, a lot of the counselors and therapists on the Secular Therapy Project will do teleconference. And as long as they're licensed in your state, because as a therapist, you can be licensed in multiple states, you can find a therapist that, you know, might help you. So if you're like in East Bumfuck, Alabama, you might be able to find someone that is actually going to be secular and is not going to tell you to, you know, pray it away or whatever. So I just wanted to mention that because you brought that up, and I just wanted to point that out because now we're living in the age of the internet and Zoom. So,
yeah. Yeah. That's a really good point.
That's how I talk to my psychiatrist. Is only 20 minutes for me, and I talk to her on Zoom. So
yeah. It's just convenient. Yeah.
It is very convenient.
Secularththerapy.org. Yeah. And I appreciate you bringing that up, John, as well. I mean, some of that is a little bit heavy. Like, I love how you've mentioned, you know, a lot of things. You're like, you know, some things I'm really laughing off, you know, this is something that we can all look back and say, oh, you know, I thought the silly thing and then I laughed it off. Like, I mean, I, for one, at one point in my life told someone that Nickelback was my favorite band. And now we laugh about that.
I'm going to judge you.
I know.
So to be fair, they're not that bad. There's a couple songs that slap. So
They do. We're all going to get canceled now by the internet because I said that. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, everyone.
The internet will be after us now.
Yeah. But, you know, it's okay to laugh about things. And my video stream has just gotten a little fuzzy. Let me fix that. Okay, sorry about that. But yeah, and I think that's great that, you know, you kind of mentioned having that healthy attitude. And also sometimes there are things that we need to get professional support for. And if that's something that someone's going through, check out Secular Therapy Project. And I just wanted to mention too, we have had a couple of prior speakers on RFRX who have talked specifically about suicide. And for example, Lindsay Doolittle, I dropped her talk, the link to her talk in the chat. She talked about suicide bereavement and support. And we also recently had Armin Navabi in his talk. He discussed suicide in the talk called Why There Is No God. And I think that one's actually fixing to show up on the YouTube channel as well. It's already on the podcast. So
Phil's almost caught up. Phil's almost caught up on all the videos. So
yes, yeah. Our super awesome team has been cranking those out. So anyway, check those out if that's information that might be relevant based on what we discussed. So anyway, moving on from that, thank you for sharing that. Let's talk a little bit about your online community. You mentioned, John, that after you deconverted, building an online community in a space where people could talk about these issues and discuss questions and debate ideas and critically evaluate claims was something that became really important to you. Could you talk a little bit about why that was so important and how you came up with the title Godless Engineer for your channel?
So I guess I'll start from the beginning. Like, how did I come up with the Godless Engineer moniker? Well, after graduating with my software engineering master's degree, you know, I had a lot of time on my hands because I don't know how many people over here have been to engineering school. It takes a lot of time. You know, it takes up a lot of time. Plus I was also working like full-time job at the same time. So, I had a lot of time on my hands and, you know, I had kind of, you know, stumbled into this new worldview that I was kind of fleshing out and everything like that. And, I initially just started, you know, being myself on Facebook. That apparently was problematic for family members because like I would answer church's Facebook pages. Like they'd put out one of those questions that had like a blank in it. And so I think that one of them was like, oh, Jesus is blank. And I was like, a crutch for the weak-minded. And like, so I put that up there and I wouldn't necessarily say that now, just because, you know, that was at the time when I was, you know, kind of newly coming into this and I was getting a little bit more sure of myself as far as expressing my ideas and everything like that. And plus it was just a post on Facebook and I was trying to be like, you know, sort of, I guess, funny, edgy, sort of atheist, I guess. And that was problematic for some family members. And so out of respect for them, because apparently a couple of them actually unfriended me over it. So out of respect for family members and everything like that, I decided to create a Facebook page. And so I was just sitting there mulling it over, like, what should I call it? And, you know, I started with Atheist Engineer, but I'm like, no, that seems a little bit too on the nose and everything. And so I was trying to go for a word that, you know, communicated that I didn't believe in God, but was, you know, kind of different. And so I went with Godless Engineer, and so that wasn't taken anywhere or anything. And so I just, you know, that's what I did. I created a Facebook page and I started pretty much just interacting as my Facebook page all over the place, at the time. And, eventually the Facebook page grew and, you know, a few people that I had met, I'd let them come on to post stuff on there. And so, you know, we eventually grew to, I think right now it's sitting at about 128,000 followers on Facebook. And, you know, the thing that I learned from Facebook was, pretty much just that there's this larger community of people out there that, you know, are in these very religiously affiliated areas, and you know the only place that they feel like they can reach out is online. And so you know, I had the Facebook page and I was cultivating community on there, and then I created a group for the Facebook page, and that started gaining a lot of community attention, and people started interacting in the community. And you know, everybody that was interacting on the page, I mean, we had a pretty good I guess, cohesive nature. Like, you know, we were all just sort of conversing and everything like that. And one day somebody that was, you know, didn't like what I was doing, said that it was really easy for me to do it, while sitting behind like a faceless, icon or whatnot, because on my YouTube or on my Facebook page, I just have a QR code and that's how I've always had it. And, so I'm like, I can do videos. And so I made a video, you know, and I put it up on a channel and everything. And so I'm like, see, I'm not scared to be out there. It was more about, see, a lot of this has been more about me, like being okay with my point of view. Cause that's been one of the hardest things for me to overcome, in this entire process, is being okay with this new worldview that I have, this very secular worldview, and realizing that it's okay for me to disagree with people that I grew up with, the people that I idolized, people that I was friends with. And so, you know, I kind of had this new kind of confidence about me, and I didn't want to be afraid to speak up anymore, to, you know, contradict somebody or to disagree with anybody, because, you know, growing up in the South in religious, you know, it kind of compliance is the thing that's kind of taught. And I don't know if anybody else has a lot of that kind of experience, but in my experience, like, it's just automatically assumed that, like, you know, you don't back talk your parents, you don't, which is essentially don't disagree with me, is kind of what it ended up being. And of course, you know, parents were like, ah, you've got to go to church, you've got to stay awake in church. And then, you know, I had friends that were like, did you see John falling asleep in church? And so, like, you know, I had all of those kinds of things going on, you know, just basically, you know, people make me feel ashamed for not being as interested in religion or not being as invested in my faith as they were. And so after leaving, you know, religion and everything, I wanted to be confident in what I was discussing and communicating to people. And so that's why I read up on a whole bunch of stuff. Like, I got a whole bunch of, I guess what you would call now new atheist literature, from, you know, Christopher Hitchens. And, I mean, I haven't read a lot of Sam Harris, but I read like the Sam Harris's, the moral landscape and everything. And, you know, I was reading up on all of those things. And, you know, just trying to have the best position that I could, because, you know, I really wanted to not like own anybody on any particular topic, but it was more about me, you know, feeling secure in what I believe, because the entire, up until this point, my entire life, I just accepted what people told me. Like, I just accepted that God existed. I just accepted that, you know, snakes can talk and convince you to eat a fruit salad. Like, I just accepted these things as being true. And so, when I left religion, I decided that I was not going to just accept things because somebody says it's true, or just accept things because somebody's really confident about accepting it or believing in it or anything like that. So, which makes it really, it makes it incredibly agitating whenever I hear somebody that's just like, oh, you just want to sin. It's like, I was sinning while I was a Christian. I don't know what you're talking about. Like, they always act like, oh, nobody sins until they leave the faith. And it's like, no, are you kidding me? But in any case, you know, building this online community, I really wanted to focus on just providing a space for people to either learn new information, have constructive discussions on things, or just find support, you know, in each other. You know, being able to go to like my Facebook page and see other people that are saying the same things that you are thinking, showing that you're not alone. And I believe that's one of the things that my wife, Casey, she noticed about like the Facebook page, because this was before her and I actually met, but you know, she would come to the Facebook page and she, you know, saw that people were saying some of the same things that she was thinking, and that made her feel comfortable, you know, in, you know, her, the way that she was thinking about things. 'Cause she was really feeling like, oh, well, maybe I'm, you know, maybe this is wrong of me to think, maybe I'm wrong about this. But, you know, in interacting with not only my page, but, other pages in the online sphere, you know, she really started to accept that, you know, she, you know, her view about things. And so that's kind of the atmosphere that I wanted to build. And not only on Facebook, but also on like the YouTube page. I feel like on my YouTube channel, putting a face with the Godless Engineer thing that had been, you know, just a QR code for the longest time. I feel like, you know, I felt like that was a much stronger statement for people to not be afraid of, you know, speaking against religious ideas, and you know, not being afraid to be known for being contrary to the religious majority that exists in whatever area of the world that they're in. And so at least for me, I felt like that was stronger. Now I feel like nowadays it's like, oh, you got a YouTube channel, everybody's got a fucking YouTube channel, you know, kind of thing. What does that matter? But I feel like that sentiment probably comes from this whole feeling of, you know, being part of the status quo, like, oh, well, you know, which Christians, I have come to find out, not meaning to blanket statement all Christians, but like, I feel like a lot of Christians think that they're like in the minority, and they want to portray themselves as being part of the minority, as if to say, oh, well, praising God and believing in Jesus is the one thing that society doesn't like. And it's like, is it really though?
That's not the minority if you live in the United States.
Like, right. We do have one comment to make, but I just want to say this quick thing. So I was watching an exorcism video today that was done by another podcaster that I'm friends with. And I was just sitting there and I was like, what if this person, I don't know if she was a shyster or she generally had a mental illness where she thought she was possessed by demons. And what really upset me was the pastor said to her, like, were you abused? Because then demons affect your body when you're abused. That was the implication he was making, which really bothered me, because it's gross to think that if you have trauma that is caused by something supernatural and not the person that caused you the trauma. And I don't know if she was a shyster or anything like that, but it just really, really pissed me off. And it's the thing that you were saying about how when you start going through the process and you're looking at it for what it is, it's not just a matter of taking apart the belief, but who you are when you separate from it and where your morals are, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, and it also takes you a moment to decide, like, do I want to be an activist? Like, it took me a little bit to get here, but now I'm here. It took you a little bit to get here where you're just like, well, fuck it. You know, I want to speak up for the things I care about. So, you know, it's just those two things that I kind of mush together, because it just makes sense when you see the harm that religion does, that if it's done to yourself or others, you want to say something about it. So I just wanted to say that, you know, I feel you, man. Anyway, Cara, please make a comment thing. Shut me up.
No, you're great. This is why we have you here. Your make is 20% cooler. And
I do.
Have good observations. But yeah, I did want to make a comment, actually. And someone mentioned a question in the chat that I'm going to go ahead and read now, because it was something I wanted to ask you about too, John. I really love one of the quotes that I saw. I think it was in your bio on your YouTube channel, where you mention that for you, the term godless signifies that religion is a part of our past, and that's not something that we should be ashamed of. And someone just now mentioned in the chat a question, and I'll just read it to you and see what your response is. They said, in reading the announcement of your presentation on the show tonight, I did some thinking about the godless idea. I see it as a less in-your-face description to anyone religious rather than atheist. They've been taught to be very afraid of an atheist, but as I'm considering the term godless, do you use it as a less intrusive way to define yourself? In other words, could you use godless to define something along the lines of, well, I haven't found one worth worshiping yet, but I hold out the option that I might? Or, you know, how do you kind of engage with that term, and how do you see that being received by your formerly religious, your former peers who are still religious?
Well, so I have a little bit different of a relationship with the term godless, because I guess the way that it's been portrayed to me, like either in like the news cycle or media, or maybe it's just Alabama in general, but like, you know, like the godless heathens, like that's always been such a negative thing. Like it communicates such a negative thing about a person. Like it, like to me, like when I was a Christian or when I just believed in God, it communicated like, oh, they lack morals. They're savages. They're, you know, they're horrible people. Like they'll, you know, kill you in the blink of an eye kind of thing. Like to call somebody godless seemed to be an insult. As far as you know, what's on my channel, I chose godless not to be like in your face or any, or to you know, remind people that I have no morals or something like that. But I did choose it because it does signify that, like, you know, I feel like, to me, after leaving religion, it signified that, you know, God was part of my life, but is no longer there. And that, you know, putting it out there like that, like, I guess just sort of in a person's face, showed that I wasn't ashamed to be without God, I guess is kind of how I felt about it. I didn't see godless as like a less intrusive way. I know that a lot of people have a problem with atheists now, but at the time, I feel like atheist and godless, to me at least, didn't really have that big of a difference, other than, you know, I had heard atheists, like atheist was a label that was being tossed around everywhere, like in the early 2010s, which is when I kind of started the activism thing. And so atheist was everywhere, but what I didn't see a lot of was the term godless. Like I saw it some, like there have been some things that have been, you know, godless. And I really liked, you know, just how godless communicated the same thing as atheist, but it was, you know, different so that people would take notice of it. And what that communicated to them was whatever, you know, whatever it meant to them. To me, when I thought of the moniker, it meant that, you know, these are two things that are important to my life right now, because I was a newly minted software engineer working full time at my job, you know, doing everything that I could to be a good engineer. But I was also a godless person. And to me, that just meant that I wasn't ashamed to let you know that I no longer believe in God. And that was something that I kind of wore proudly. And so I guess it's actually the exact opposite of what the question is asking here, because I wasn't trying to be subversive or soften the blow of not believing in God. I actually wanted it to be more in the face of somebody that I didn't believe in their particular deity.
That's really interesting. I love that. And I know now I'm hyper aware of the fact that I say that's really interesting about 6 or 7 times in every episode that we have.
I'm sorry, I pointed that out.
Someone pointed that out to me, rightly so.
I offer a laugh all the time. So, you know, we all have to have our quirks.
Yeah, no, and I love it. And I do think that's really interesting. Language is kind of funny, how the same word can mean completely opposite things to people. And this is why it's so important to have conversations like we're having tonight, and to have programs like what you have on your channel as well, where we sit down and actually discuss at length topics and explain issues and what do I mean by this term and what is this concept, and let's talk about it and let's break it down. And that's super important. So I kind of like that. So, okay. Random segue then, based on that, we're kind of talking about now what you do on your program. And you've said before on your channel, your goal is to critically analyze claims and to kind of talk about the evidence that supports or doesn't support them. And you've had claims that are coming from religious apologists. You've also had debates and discussions with people who are non-religious that might disagree on other issues. And so my question then is, have you ever, in the course of creating a video about a topic or a claim, changed your mind on that topic or some piece of it?
Well, so there's only been one particular topic that really matches that exactly, because most of the time whenever I'm researching something and I learn something new, or I learn a different way to approach the topic, or I learn that I'm wrong about one particular thing, I just, you know, as long as I see sufficient evidence that I'm wrong, you know, just unequivocally I'm wrong, I accept it and I incorporate it into, you know, my knowledge, and then I just sort of move on. And it's either I mention it in the video, like, I used to think this thing, but in actuality, here's the evidence that shows I was wrong, kind of thing. Like, I've done that before. The one topic that exactly matches what you're talking about is actually the historicity of Jesus. Because in that particular time, I wasn't making like a video or anything, but I was taking part in conversations on Facebook groups. And so it came to this point where somebody asked, or somebody made the claim, like, well, there's no evidence Jesus even existed. I'm like, what? There's got to be evidence that Jesus existed. I mean, come on, what are you saying? And, you know, it got to the point where they were like, go find some evidence that Jesus existed and bring it to me. And so I'm like, okay, fine. And so I did a quick Google search and I'm like, fuck, where is the evidence? So I brought up one thing, and this one person said, oh, there's a pilot stone, so that's obvious, that proves that Jesus existed. I'm like, no. That shows that Pilate existed. It doesn't say anything about the stuff that Jesus did or anything like that. And so, you know, just sort of Googling around, trying to find solid arguments that prove that Jesus existed, I came upon the debate that I didn't even know was happening at the time, between mythicism and historicists. And so I went into the same sort of mode that I went into when I was analyzing, you know, what I believed and why I believed it. And I did it for this particular question too. And so, you know, following the same rules, like, I'm like, well, look, I'm whatever side I fall on, I'm going to make sure that I have good evidence and good reasons to make the statement that I'm making. Because if you have that, then, you know, even if somebody proves you wrong, you can't say that I didn't have good reasons for holding my position beforehand. And so, you know, I kind of I approached the topic like that, and I eventually came out on the side of mythicists, which, you know, we could talk about later if we have time for it. But, you know, that it's similar thing happened to as to, you know, what happens whenever I'm making a video and I find out that I'm wrong about something. Like, I, you know, I'll find out some information, and then, you know, if there's sufficient reason to believe that that's true, incorporate it into my knowledge. And then I go forward, you know, with research or with daily life or whatever, with this new knowledge as part of my worldview. And I reject, like, the old knowledge, which I feel like, you know, is very scientific methody of me, and kind of speaks to that more analytical engineering kind of side of me. Because, you know, in engineering, if you're told, oh, hey, you don't have sufficient support for this particular limit on this value, you need to find better support for it, then it's like, oh, shit. And then you got to go and you got to find, like, oh, well, this is, you know, dictated here and everything like that. And you got to have your references and everything to justify, like, having a limit on this one particular item. And, you know, it's similar in fashion, like, with whatever question you're talking about, whether or not Jesus existed or God exists, or, you know, any particular claim about the New Testament or anything that you might believe, it all comes down to, well, what evidence do you have for it? Does that evidence actually support your conclusion? And if you can answer both of those things in the
start that. Okay. Okay. We're back up. Carry on. Sorry about that. Okay.
But you know, as long as you have good reasons to believe what you believe, I don't think that anybody should really fault you for believing in any certain thing. Like, I don't necessarily fault Christians out there for thinking that a magical first century wizard resurrected from the dead because his dad wanted him to, because that's something that they have been told is a fact of reality. And they have never, or at least in my experience with a lot of people, they've never truly engaged the topic of what evidence do we have for this. Like, there's plenty of people have argued about it to no end, but I feel like a lot of people just haven't truly engaged in an actual historical analysis of the argument, which I feel like if anybody does, they're going to realize like how not good the evidence is. And it ultimately relies on faith as to whether or not you believe in it. And for some people, that's enough. For other people, it's not. And I'm part of the group that it's not enough, that, you know, you just need to have faith in this one particular aspect. But so I don't necessarily fault anybody that, you know, believes in certain religious ideas. But, you know, it does approach a point of diminishing returns to continue having conversations with people that, you know, just want to tell you how you're going to hell. And no matter how much you tell them, that doesn't affect me. Like, I'm not scared of hell because I don't believe in your God. You know, at some point, I generally not necessarily break contact with everybody because, you know, there's family members, there's close friends and everything like that. You got to figure out a compromise. And so like for I feel like this may be veering off into a different topic, but for like family members and everything like that, we have this compromise of, you know, we just won't talk about God, Jesus, and all this other stuff. And that has worked out really well for those family members that are willing to do that. All of this just to say that I focus on the evidence that's used to support you know, statements, and if the evidence is good enough to support the conclusion, then, you know, I don't think anybody should fault you for believing in that thing. And, you know, and that also leaves room for you to be, for that evidence to be proven wrong later. Because, you know, there's this whole kind of temporal idea of what evidence supports the conclusion, because, you know, we could discover new evidence in the future that overrides the previous evidence, or there could be some new argument that shows how, well, this evidence doesn't really support the conclusion. At that point, then it's all about how you incorporate this new information into your worldview. You know, there are some people that just outright deny it, won't accept it, don't even engage with it. And so that's how they resolve that cognitive dissonance. And then you have other people that incorporate it into their worldview. And, you know, that's just part of their worldview now. And, so I think it's all in how you resolve that cognitive dissonance there.
I just want to say something really quick, because this brought up a thought in my brain. When people go through deconstruction, it doesn't always lead to atheism. It can just lead to you, like, you don't believe in religious structures anymore, that you find certain religious structures toxic, and you still believe, but you still believe in a God or a higher power. That's fine. Like, I'm going to, like, we can debate about philosophy and that, but are you a kind person? Are you being the best that you can to others? Then I don't care, you know, but it's only when you use your religion or worldview to say that's how somebody else is wrong. Like, you know, we're just trying to sin, you know, and I'm just like, you know, no, that's not fair. So I like, you know, that's kind of my perspective on it. But we did want to bring up the poll questions, because yes. You mentioned something about, you know, that we were talking about the engineering thing. So I was trying to segue there and it didn't work. So just bring up the poll question.
It was a great segue, Helen.
It was terrible. Don't patronize me, Cara.
It was, I thought it was good.
Okay.
But it made sense in my brain, which I feel like over time our brains have increasingly become fused together.
Like I said in chat, we're going to merge as one and destroy the patriarchy. That's how it's going to work.
Yes, we are. That is going to happen. So, spoiler alert, that's coming next.
It's going to be a really good movie.
Yes. And then the results of our poll from the beginning of the show. So a couple of things that we asked were, the first one is, what's the best programming language? And I'll go over the results here. 27% of people selected Java, 3% selected Kotlin, 0% of people selected R, which I'm kind of disappointed about because that was going to be my choice and apparently no one else's, so sorry everyone about that. 13% of people chose Python, and these are not being shared. Okay, now they are being shared. Thank you for letting me know that they were not visible. 3% of people selected Ada. And 53% of people, the majority, picked something else. And those were being discussed in the chat, and we saw all sorts of things, C++ and everything else. So those were our choices for that. John, did you want to weigh in on your response to that question, first of all?
Yeah, so, I mean, currently right now I'm working in Kotlin, and that's why I suggested Kotlin. Kotlin is a language primarily, or at least in my experience, is primarily used for Android programming, because at work right now we're writing Android applications. I think the one that I primarily worked with in the past has been C#. But I also like JavaScript. Like, I mean, there's so many out there. Like, each one can be used for different things. So it's like asking to choose, well, do you like a hammer or do you like a Phillips head screwdriver better? And it's kind of like, what do you mean? Like, I can't use a hammer for the things I would use a screwdriver for, but they're all integral into building, you know, these things. So it just kind of depends on what you want to do as to what's the best tool to use it with.
You know, you said words, and I know those are words of things that people use, but it was just like, sure.
Well, you know what they say, if everything, if all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a screw, right?
And then that's kinky.
Yeah, I see what I did there. Okay, so we also had a second question. This goes back to what you were talking about. Which claim do you think is more likely to be true? And we had several answer choices. One of them was, there was a historical Jesus at the start of Christianity. 50% of people answered yes to that one. That is the one they thought was most likely to be true. 3% of people selected there are Mexican alien mummies, which has been a claim that came in the news recently. I'm going to use the term news very loosely there. No one thought that chemtrails control your mind, and I am glad to hear that. And also, no one thought that some people are reptilians.
I'm very disappointed by that answer, that nobody thought not. That's my favorite conspiracy theory, and the fact that nobody picked it, I'm like kind of hurt.
I'm not bothered by that, but you know, that's okay.
It bothers me. It bothers me a lot.
And we have disagreements here, and that's fine. We discuss ideas. And 47% of people selected none of the above, meaning they did not believe any of those things to be true. So that kind of goes back to your point, John. You mentioned earlier that you kind of plant yourself in the mythicist camp in terms of saying that the Jesus that is referenced in the Bible or that is associated with Christianity did not exist. And just to be clear, that is not necessarily the consensus opinion or the majority opinion within the scholarly community when it comes to historians of this time period, right? But like, for example, you've had conversation with scholars such as Bart Ehrman on this and did not agree, and that's fine. But it's kind of interesting, though, to just kind of like you mentioned earlier, being able to just have the conversation and have arguments and debates about things, because the point is talking about what we believe and why we believe them and having a conversation where we are convinced of things based on whatever the reasons are, whatever the evidence are, and being able to have those conversations out loud rather than walking around kind of being forced into, you have to believe this because your parents told you, right? Would you say that's kind of a fair description?
Yeah, I would say so, because I mean, like I said earlier, my parents just told me God existed and all this other stuff, so once I started skeptically looking at that particular question, I mean, pretty much everything was open for, you know, mm-hmm. consideration for me. Although I will say that there are some ideas that I think that, you know, probably I haven't, you know, exactly examined as closely, like the whole lizard people thing. Like, I feel I feel like you, in order to claim that, you would need to provide, you know, the evidence. And so
Mark like, Zuckerberg, John, Mark yeah, Zuckerberg.
that's just evidence of like maybe alien androids or something like that.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's true. But I mean, you bring up a good point too about, you know, the burden of proof being on the person that's making the claim. You need to convince me that this outrageous or implausible thing that you are positing actually happened. It's not up to me to prove that it didn't happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's no, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Well, yeah. And I was going to say, as far as the Jesus question goes, I think as long as you contextualize like who Jesus was in the first century, like who people believed he was, I feel like, you know, even just a cursory look at other individuals that are similar to Jesus, you know, I feel like, you know, he definitely fits a pattern of a certain kind of savior deity that, you know, provides this kind of salvation, because Christianity is not the only one that provides eternal salvation through the baptism of, you know, through their savior's suffering and death. There's actually a whole class of religions prior to Christianity, and along with Christianity, that provided those exact same things. So I feel like contextualizing the Jesus story and the beliefs of the earliest Christians that we have evidence of, I feel like that can, you know, as long as you come at the question in the correct, with the correct, like, context, I feel like it's kind of easy to get at least to agnosticism. Like, we just don't really know.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, you know, I think you make a really good point too about, you know, even when we were trying to develop this poll question where we were asking this and we were trying to figure out, how do we phrase this? Do we say the Jesus of the Bible, the Jesus of the New Testament? Like, how do we even say who this person is that we're talking about? And I feel like what I'm hearing from you kind of is, well, I mean, who is this person? When you say, like, mm-hmm. was there a historical Jesus, what does that even mean? And, you know, if it's a person who's walking around raising people from the dead, maybe that's a different claim from, was it a person who was just walking around talking to people, or was there ever a person named Jesus? You know, these are three very different claims. You know, which one are we addressing?
Yes, there is, and he lives across the street from me.
Right, right. Yeah.
Literally, I'm not joking.
Yeah. So we'll get more into that probably in the hangout, but we are about at the end of our time before we go to Q&A. John, before we do that, is there anything else you want to mention before we start wrapping up? And then second of all, where can people find you and your work and your projects if they want to know more?
I don't really have too much else to add. I mean, I feel like in this interview, I've covered a whole lot more of like my personal backstory, than I typically cover like on interviews and everything. So, I don't really think that I have much else to add. As far as where to find me, pretty much on any social media, if you search up Godless Engineer, I typically come up. Most notably, I'm producing content for like Facebook and TikTok and YouTube. I don't really use the Bird app anymore too much. I check it on occasion, but
it's a dystopia. Don't do it.
Oh yeah, I totally agree. primarily YouTube is where I'm at, and that's just Godless Engineer. I do have a channel where I cut down my longer content into clips, and that's just called Godless Engineer Clips, or Godless Engineer Shorts. I think it still need to change the display name of it, but it's Godless Engineer Clips, Godless Engineer Shorts. On that channel, I just have like shorter content that's more hyper focused on specific topics rather than like whole videos analyzing you know, some apologist's argument as to why you should believe in Jesus's crucifixion or something like that, or his resurrection rather. And so, I've got those two channels that are up there that provide content. And since I'm going to Rome, in the next day or so, you know, I've actually been working really hard to get my channel prepared for that. So I have content that's already scheduled up, and it's all just automatically going to be posting for the next couple of weeks until I get back. So I love being able to schedule stuff up. That way I can still keep the channel trucking while I take a much needed breather.
How long have you been doing YouTube?
Since the early 2010s, I think I started my channel in 2012, but I didn't really get like serious about doing content on YouTube until 2015. Now, I did start like in 2012, I think I started the Facebook page, or maybe that was 2011. But I started out there first, and I was making a lot of like images and stuff to put on the page. And, so, I mean, that's when I started with activism and everything, so it was kind of a staggered start for me.
I found out about you during the plague, so because the algorithm was like, she's watching a lot of atheist stuff, here your algorithm watch this guy. So I really really like your channel, especially the discussions you get into with your guests, because like I've heard all the debunking apologetics arguments. But I really, really like the interview portion, because even on stuff you disagree with someone on, you're also like really respectful and trying to see their perspective, which I admire, because that's always a good thing.
Yeah. And I mean, I have atheists on there on occasion that I disagree with. And it typically starts out with us having a very fine conversation and, you know, agreeing to disagree and everything like that. It's only later that something else comes up and they end up getting mad at me.
That's when you get comfortable and the veneer, the glamour of getting along comes off. But no, I really do really appreciate your channel. And like, and I always say, like, just because we're atheists doesn't mean we agree. The only thing we agree upon is that there's probably not a God. Other than that, you know, it's kind of free game.
Exactly.
Anyway, when I'm moving to Q&A now that I am done talking to John about his talk and his channel. I'm doing my dance.
Good job. That is the moving. That is the segue dance now.
That's the segue dance. I'm going to call it every time I do it for every show. I'm just going to call it the segue dance.
This is now the segue dance. Y'all saw it here first. Okay. So, let's go to Q&A. And I'm actually going to start at the end because someone just put a question in the chat that I'm interested in knowing too. Someone is wondering, earlier in the show, you mentioned a passage in the Bible where there was a reference about God sewing all the vaginas shut in someone's house, and they're wondering, can you provide the reference, or what story is that from?
I'm just gonna say, whoever said that wants to know where that is, you're all sick fucks.
I mean, the Old Testament is a kinky full place of sick sometimes. Fucks,
I know.
I'm guessing was in the Old Testament. I'm putting money on that one.
That was not taught at Sunday school when I was a child. I'm just gonna say.
I'm shocked.
Okay, yeah. So it's in Genesis 20. Ooh. Let me see if I can pull this up, and I'll read directly from it.
Outstanding. Y'all didn't know we were gonna have a Bible reading this evening.
I listen. This may seem weird coming from an atheist, but I love reading the Bible because it is at times like, you know, I used to believe in the Bible, but at times the Bible is just freaking ridiculous. And so that's what makes it like just hilarious to me, reading some of these passages.
A lot of the Bible was kept for me when I was growing up. And then like when you read it, when you're an atheist, you're like, holy shit.
That's so interesting. You know, that was one of the things in my family that was always talked about in terms of why the Protestants had it right as opposed to the Catholics. And it would be, well, the Catholics don't read the Bible. They don't know all of these stories. And I'm like, well, maybe that's the case, but have you read this?
Well, the thing is, though, is that we would, when you became adult, you could read the other things within the Bible, but then it was always like an apologetic, like, you know, this is metaphor, because a lot of the Bible in the Catholic religion is metaphor. It's not meant to be taken literally. So,
yeah.
So it's a little different, you know. Is it still all bullshit and silly? Yes, but it's different. Anyway, John, please lead us about the, please read to us about the stone vaginas.
Well, okay, so what this story is it's one of the times when Abraham is moving through the land, I believe maybe of Egypt. Anyways, he comes across Abimelech. And Abimelech is sitting there, I'm guessing on his front porch or something of his palace, and he sees Abraham and Sarah walking through his area, and Abimelech's like, damn, look at Sarah, she looks good. And so, like, he goes over there, and it, you know, he's like, yo, I want your sister, or not I want your sister, but I want her. Who is she to you? And Abraham's like, oh, this is my sister. This is totally my sister, totally not my wife, because if I tell you that she's my wife, then you'll kill me and just take her anyways. So she's my sister. And so Abimelech's like, yo, girl, look, I own you now, so you might as well come on over here to the palace. And so anyways, Sarah goes to live with Abimelech and everything like that. Abraham prays to God, and you know, God is obviously pissed off because now Sarah's living with Abimelech. And at the very end of this particular chapter, after, you know, Abimelech being lied to, by the way, like, I don't mean to paint Abimelech in the best of light here, but it's like, you know, because he basically went and he stole the woman and forced her into some kind of like weird concubine marriage type situation. But
sex slavery.
So Abimelech, having been lied to about who this person was, not having full knowledge about, you know, anything, God decides to cause an affliction in the temple, or not in the temple, but in his palace, where every woman that was living in the palace, their wombs were shut. And I don't know how, like, I guess you don't necessarily have to sew up the vaginas of everybody in the house. You just need to sew up, I guess, the cervix maybe or something. I don't know. I mean, once we start thinking about this biologically, I feel like maybe we're just thinking a bit too much into it. But in any case, God prevents all of the women from being able to get pregnant by shutting all of their wombs. And when Abimelech, like, apologizes and pays Abraham for the mistake that he made, because Abraham lied to him, God then alleviates this problem of all of the wombs being shut. And so that's the story of God shutting all the wombs in this one particular house.
Wow. Wow. There's so many problems with that story. I can't even start.
Yeah. I don't even know where to begin. I do remember that story now that you mention it. And I remember reading through the Bible myself.
This is the first, like, I've heard of this story.
Oh, girl, listen, so, I tell people all the time, just start with Genesis. It does not take long for things to take a dark, dark turn. Like, you don't even have to get through Genesis before you're like, whoa, what?
Wow, I've been enlightened. And I mean, it just confirms that the Bible is a bunch of misogynistic bullshit, but it was just, you know, again, like, selling vaginas for Abraham lying to him, which is a really weird thing to do. I'm just lying to the other dude. It's very confusing.
It's something. Yep. I remember
God's justice is very confusing to me.
Yes, we do not know God's ways.
Let me ask another question now we got over the
Let's just
vaginas.
Do that. Let's just go on from that. Yes, please.
we're now segueing away from some vaginas.
Do the segue dance, Helen. Segue dance.
Okay. Was there a particular person in the debates you watched that convinced you the most to leave your beliefs behind? I don't know why that sentence was so hard.
Well, I can't really point to any one particular debate or discussion that that kind of had that effect on me. I think that it was just the culmination of like all of the debates and the religious and the religious component of those debates not having sufficient answers. Like even for me, like not even considering like the atheist counter argument to what the religious people were saying, just me listening to the religious people justify like the different things that they believed, like that in and of itself was just like totally unsatisfying for me. And so it was more the culmination of like just all of the attempts to rescue religious faith is kind of what, you know, pointed me in the direction of not believing anymore.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. And, you know,
is it interesting?
It is interesting. You know what? I think a lot of our guests have a lot of interesting things to say. That's why I keep coming back.
I love
week.
You so much. I just have to tease you. Anyway, you John, we have another question for you. Car's going to read it.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Okay. So we probably have time for this one more, possibly another one. But so the question is, what would it take for us to have more recurring secular community activities to be a competitive alternative to organized religion's fostering of community?
I mean, that's a really good question. I know that there, like here in North Alabama, there's a North Alabama Freethought group that has a substantial like amount of membership there. And they have a lot of events that go on, and like, and I'm using them because they're the group that I've had the most experience with, but you know, they essentially have like Saturday meetups, like where everybody kind of meets up and hangs out, and we've been to a few of those. But typically we're still in bed on the weekends though, but when everybody's meeting up. But you know, the groups like the North Alabama Freethought group, you know, in order to provide a pretty good alternative, I think it pretty much just has to, you know, just have an organized effort and, you know, have an organized presence, like either on social media or however you want to do that. Now, one thing is that, you know, there are some people that leave religion and then they don't think about this community aspect of it. And then there are other people that really miss that aspect of it, and they go to try to find it. And that's why you have so many local groups. And so for anybody that's really looking for that particular component, you know, I think that, you know, you could probably find like a group in your area. And I would just say that, you know, staying up to date on, you know, what stuff they're doing and how you can help. Like I know the North Alabama Freethought group, they do a lot of like charity drives. They do a lot of charity events. They post in the groups or the group, you know, whenever they're doing things and how people can help. So I mean, there's a lot of room out there for people to provide that kind of community aspect. And I just think that it takes people that are dedicated to providing that. Like if you want, I it always echoes in my mind like a really cheesy line, like be the change you want to see or something to that effect. Like if you want more of that community building aspect in atheism and you don't see it like in your local area or online or anything like that, then, you know, it can be up to you in order to provide that for other people. Just like for me, like I didn't know anything about the wider atheist community when I started, but I knew that I wanted to find a community of people. And so I kind of just started interacting, you know, with the online community, and I kind of built up this group of individuals on various platforms that where they could come and they could freely discuss ideas like that and feel, you know, like they're not alone in whatever particular position that they're holding, because there are plenty of other people that hold that same position.
Yeah,
Just before we move on, I just want to give a shout out to John's wife, Casey. She is a sweet potato. I really like talking to her at Free Flow. So I just want to say hi. I love it. You have a wonderful wife, and I just think she's the bomb. So I'm just doing a shout out to Casey.
Yeah, I just told her and she was like, hi.
That's awesome. Right,
I'm sending her love.
Yes. And John's pretty cool too.
Yeah, you're all right.
I'm okay. Okay. Honestly, KC's the more appealing of the two of us, but you know.
You're both pretty people. You're both pretty.
There you go.
All right.
You gotta be careful saying that to people from the South. You know, you don't want to say, bless your heart. Good thing you're pretty.
Yeah.
I'm a Yankee. It doesn't apply to me.
That's fair. Okay. Well, we definitely appreciate you being here, John, and all of your efforts to build that community and create places for people to go and have conversations and talk about beliefs and claims and questions and evidence and just have a place to go where they can talk about things that maybe they didn't feel like they were allowed to question in other contexts in their life. So that is super important, and we appreciate you and really appreciate your time coming on and talking to us as well. So thank you for being here.
Thank y'all for inviting me on. I had a lot of fun. I know that I get really talkative, so I appreciate y'all bearing with me.
Don, you haven't met us.
Yeah, that's what we're here for. That's what we do here.
Carter and I have both done presentations on this channel. It's fine.
Recovering from Religion is a nonprofit organization whose mission it is to provide hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. Hope, Healing, and Support is waiting for you on our website, recoveringfromreligion.org. There, you can speak or chat with a trained agent who will work with you through your struggles and doubts or to help find resources that may work for you. You can also find local Recovering from Religion support groups in your area for the long-term recovery work. Resources specifically curated for those struggling with doubts, disbelief, and trauma can also be found on the RFR website. To connect with a secular therapist in your area, go to seculartherapy.org and create an account. If you'd like to support the work that RFR does, you can donate or sign up as a volunteer on the Recovering from Religion website. It's also a big help subscribing to the RFR YouTube channel, our blog, or following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Questions, comments, and suggestions can be emailed to us at rfrx@recoveringfromreligion.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you'll be with us next time on the Recovering from Religion podcast.